Marathon? Okay, great. Thank you. So, Bob, why don't you start off and just tell us about yourself, tell us about your family, where you started in ministry, and then how you got to Cornerstone, something, you know, a few things like that.
Okay, so I graduated from Bob Jones University in 1983, got married that same year, and went to back to my home church, which was in Ohio. So I am a Buckeye. Okay, sorry.
We'll edit that out.
All right. I was there for 4 years as a youth pastor and then moved up to Detroit. I was asked to become part of the ministry staff of a church at that time that was called Temple Baptist Church, and which became Northridge. And I was there for about 2.5 years when this church on the east side called Cornerstone Baptist Church was without a pastor. And they asked me to come, and it, for a variety of reasons, was a good move for me to go. That was almost 29 years ago. That'll be 29 years ago in December. So I've been there for a little bit of time. So Kathy and I married in 1983, and so we have 3 children, a son and his wife also have 3 children, and he is a graduate of Boyce College, which is the undergraduate program at Southern Seminary. He also is a graduate of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary with his MDiv in missions, and he and his wife are planning to go to Ghana by the end of this year through the International Mission Board. We have a daughter named Rebecca. She's married to Don and Ann McGee's youngest son, and they live in Memphis, Tennessee, but they're going to be relocating here fairly soon. She works at St. Jude Children's Research Center. She's in the bone marrow transplant unit there. And then our youngest, Ariana, she's a graduate of Grove City College, and she is a lieutenant in the United States Army. She's in Fort Bragg. So she knows how to kill her dad about 10 different ways, so I'm nice to her. Our background as a church, Cornerstone Baptist Church, is the result of a merger of 2 congregations who came together in 1983. The Beulah Baptist Church was originally started by the First Baptist Church of Detroit in the late 1890s. And then the Gratiot Avenue Baptist Church, which was located on Gratiot Avenue, was started in the 1920s, also in the east side of Detroit. Those 2 congregations merged in 1983. They formed Cornerstone Baptist Church. So it's an independent congregation. As I said, I came in 1989. And the only thing I had heard about, really, the Southern Baptist Convention was just a lot of bad stuff, because theologically, it had gone sideways. And so that was about all that I knew of it. When I was been at Cornerstone for just a few years, I took a group of guys always to different conferences that I could, and particularly conferences that were really strong on expositional preaching and had a good, proper understanding of the gospel. And there had been a conference like that in Toledo. And so one of the speakers at this conference was this guy named Al Mohler. And I didn't know who Al Mohler was. And he got up, and he had been the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary for just a little over a year at this point. And he started to talk about what had happened at Southern Seminary and how there had been, and there was an entire change that was taking place. I had never heard in my life of any organization within Christianity that had started out conservative and that had just gone off the rails and came back. I've always known of organizations that had gone off the rails and then just went into oblivion. And so to hear that story and to hear even the price that he had paid personally in seeing that transition take place, I mean, I was overwhelmed. I was sitting like on the third row right over here, and I just started weeping. And I was so blown away by what had taken place. So I went up to him afterward, and he didn't know, you know, I'd never met this guy before. And I said, you've got to come to Cornerstone. You have got to tell this story at Cornerstone. And we're not a Southern Baptist church. We're just, and he said, sure, I'll come. And so he came, and the congregation just fell in love with him. And so we decided as a church that we needed to get behind what he was doing, because that institution has been a flagship institution, one of the largest seminaries, if not the largest seminary in the world. And so to see that going in that direction, we thought, you know what, we want to encourage that. Now, I'm a graduate of Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary. I love that school, and I appreciate that school, and I am a supporter of that school. I go back and preach in chapel, but we would all recognize that the influence of Detroit Seminary is not gonna have the impact that Southern Seminary is gonna have, and those two seminaries each have a place. And we recognize that the impact of Southern Seminary is probably going to be, it's going to be larger. So we decided we're going to get behind that. And so we started financially supporting the seminary at that time. What we didn't realize is that by supporting the seminary, there's a sense in which we were viewed as being a Southern Baptist congregation. Not because we had voted to join anything, but because, well, we had voted to support the seminary. And so from the perspective of the coalition of churches that are joined together, they viewed us as a sister congregation now because, well, we had skin in the game. I mean, we were helping to advance the gospel. So that's what we did. We did that for a number of years, and because of that, there was a tuition discount for our kids and all that stuff, but we began to think that we needed to have a greater level of partnership. Just as I want the members of my congregation to do more than just show up on a Sunday morning and go home and say, thank you very much. You know, I got my little spiritual vitamin B12 shot for the week, but I want us to you know, serve in harmony together. We as a congregation, you know, just we're looking at what are ways that we can be better partners for the sake of the gospel. And it was during these years that our network of churches here in the Detroit area was forming. And but we also realized that our network here is a good fellowship, but there's also more that we can do. And so we saw that being in friendly cooperation with the Southern Baptist Convention allowed us to have a seat at the table so that we were able to have a voice with some of the church planting efforts that are going on in the Detroit area. It gave us a voice in a lot of the ministries that you have already, you know, depicted here. And it also allowed us to partner in these ministries without having to create them. It's like they're already going. There's a, like, the disaster relief ministry is awesome. And, you know, it's like, send your people. I mean, it's there, it's going, and now we can. So that was really our experience. Being in friendly cooperation with the Southern Baptist Convention doesn't mean that's the only thing we do. I mean, in fact, we are in friendly cooperation with a lot of people and organizations that are in harmony theologically and philosophically. The Southern Baptist Convention happens to be one of those.
That's great. Well, I think that gave us a pretty good, you know, backdrop for, you know, how you came to partner with the SBC. That is cornerstone,
it also
right?
Yeah. Is an illustration of why when my kids would ask me a question, they would say, "Dad, short answer."
Yeah, right. Okay, so let me provide a little bit of a structure to hang some of the things that Bob has said, you know, for us. So the Southern Baptist Convention has a number of different wings to it, if you will, right? So he mentioned the North American Missions Board and the International Missions Board. So those are all of these SBC churches. Remember, we've already talked about the fact that the SBC, as Bob's been using this phrase, is a loose cooperation of churches. In other words, it's not like joining the SBC, you know, has us joining a denomination, as it were, but rather a cooperation of churches. Churches cooperating for different purposes. One of them is for missions. So the North American Missions Board is how the Southern Baptist churches support church planting in America. The International Missions Board, as he mentioned, that his church is. And did you say your daughter was going to Ghana?
Son.
Your son is going to Ghana, so that obviously be an international church plant or missions work. So that would go through the IMB, the International Missions Board. So the Southern Baptists have certainly this missions wing to it, right? In addition to that, they have an educational arm. Right, so they've got a number of undergraduate universities and seminaries. So he mentioned Boyce College and the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Those are connected on one campus in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan graduated from both of them, and that's where we go every 2 years as a group of men to Together for the Gospel. I've been down there a number of times for other kinds of classes and things like that. We've had, you recall Tom Schreiner, Dr. Schreiner has been here, preached in our pulpit. He's a professor at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, as well as Dr. Brian Vickers, who's also preached here for one of our missions conferences. So I'm just trying to, like, give you some things to hang, you know, ideas and sort of pull all this together with. Disaster relief, you mentioned. We've talked about that. And how we can, if we were in the Southern Baptist Convention, we could participate in disaster relief through SBC churches that are in the vicinities of those disasters, right? You hadn't mentioned the ERLC. Do you want to tell us what that is and if you've had any connection with that?
We haven't had any direct connection with that organization, but it's the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission that Russ Moore, who is a former vice president of Southern Seminary, heads up. It's really a conservative evangelical think tank. And Russ Moore has done such a wonderful job in articulating social issues through a biblical grid, and he is a wonderful voice that helps provide excellently thought out materials on these issues. And so all Bible believing Christians benefit from the ministry of Russ Moore. Partnering with the SBC, it is a way to say, thank you, we support what you're doing, keep going.
Yeah. So Russell Moore and his team put together the language that we adopted into our Constitution to protect us from gender lawsuits, you know, that language about what we believe about sexuality and marriage. That language was drafted by the ERLC, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. So that's another sort of wing, if you will, of the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay, so let me just jump in. You've hit a lot of these things, but I want to make sure maybe there's some clarification that we can provide with a couple of follow-up questions here. So, so tell us about the process of joining the SBC. So you talked about sort of being viewed as an SBC church through your support of the seminary, right? But at some point you guys formally joined the SBC. What does that mean? What does that look like? Can you kind of walk us through that?
As you indicated, there's different areas of Southern Baptist life that you can participate in. So if you honestly, as a church, started writing a check and sending it to the headquarters of the Southern Baptist Convention and you earmarked that for Southern Seminary or Southeastern Seminary, or you earmarked it for the North American Mission Board, whatever you earmark it for, that's what it goes for. They would view you as a Southern Baptist church, you know, particularly since you are a Baptist church. Now, if you're a Methodist church and you do that, they're going to say, thank you, but they're not going to. Okay. There has to be a basic theological affinity. Now, Southern Baptist life is organized more on the basis of the states. So the states have their own churches that cooperate together and cooperate for ministries within each state. For example, in Michigan, the state association owns a camp. It's called Bambi Lake. And it's a nice camp facility, and a lot of the churches take advantage of that camp facility. And there's men's retreats there. There's women's retreats there. There's summer camps and things like that. So now, that's not something that we do. We have kind of been doing something different, and that's not something we need to do. But it's available, you know, because of that. But anyway, your involvement in then the state association, that is where you start really doing more partnering with local churches and so forth. So when we were looking at saying, you know what, we need to pull our weight. We need to do a little bit more. And we chose to be involved more at the state level. For us, it was more than just saying, we're going to include that in our budget. We said, we're going to do that, but what that means is we're going to choose to be involved where it makes sense for us as a congregation. And where that makes sense for us is particularly partnering with the church planting efforts in this Detroit region. So there's a lot of emphasis that the North American Mission Board is giving to the greater Detroit area. And they have put a lot of financial muscle behind getting church planters up here into the Detroit region and seeing churches planted. That process demands not only guys coming up, but they need mentors. They need encouragers. So about 3 years ago, there's a guy by the name of Eric Stewart. Eric is up in the Flint area. wants to plant a church. So he goes to the Southern Baptist and State Association, and the State Association takes him through an approval process. They check out his theology. They check out his credentials, basically, you know, marriage and things. And once they give him the green light, and they need to find a mentor for him. So they asked me if I would do that. Well, I wouldn't have had that opportunity if we weren't in partnership with the Southern Baptist Convention. Sure. On the state. And so, but because of that, it gave me the opportunity to mentor Eric. Well, we're now about 2.5-3 years into this, and Eric has done a wonderful job up in the Schwartz Creek area. Mm-hmm. And God in his grace has given him just a really healthy congregation. And he preaches expositionally. It's an elder-led congregational ruled government. It is, they are committed to a proper view of conversion and biblical theology and discipleship. I mean, it's just right down the line, just a really wonderful, healthy congregation. And so Eric is now influencing other pastors. And I have the opportunity to meet with Michael Geyer. Had lunch with Michael Geyer this week. Michael is coming up from North Carolina with three other families. He's going to be planting a church in Ann Arbor. And so I've already told Michael about our network of pastors that we meet together with on a regular basis, because he's going to need that encouragement. Yeah. And so forth. But it's because of those relationships. The other thing that I appreciate about the Southern Baptist Convention, at least in the state here, is they recognize church planning organizations like Acts 29. Acts 29 is doing a good job. And so instead of being territorial and saying, well, that's Acts 29, that's not SBC, they recognize, no, that is a gospel-solid ministry and organization. They're doing a great job of church planting. So there is intentional communication. So if Acts 29, which is a church planting ministry based on a cooperation of Acts 29 churches, if they're planting a church just down the street, well, the North American Mission Board isn't going to plant a church in that area. They're going to say, great, you've got that area. We're going to go over here. That hasn't always been the case with Christian organizations. Even in missions, sometimes you go halfway around the world and you're teaching at a Bible college only to find out there's another Bible college the next block over. It's just with another mission organization. And you go, what are we doing this for? That's crazy. And so I'm grateful that there's a real together for the gospel attitude, even in church planting in the Detroit area. So we're not stepping on each other's toes. There's enough sinners, aren't there, so that we can say, okay, you got that group, you got that group, you got that area. And so it's good. It's refreshing to see that effort being made.
That's great. That's great. So you've talked about church planters. What about church revitalizations? Do you have efforts or opportunities for that? In other words, if there was a small SBC church in the region that was struggling, would you be a target for the SBC to reach out to maybe help come alongside a church like that? Have you had any experience in that?
Yes. There's a church that was probably about 5 miles west of us that was going to close its doors. They didn't see how they could go forward. So, but because of the trust. That was a historic Southern Baptist congregation. Even though we were a little new to the party, they trusted us. And so we just gave them some families. And God has kept that church going. But it was because of that relationship. Tomorrow morning at 6:30, I will meet with a pastor and a potential church planter, both who are in the SBC. One guy is bivocational and was kind of put into a situation which he felt like he was a little bit over his head. It was because of the SBC affiliation that he and I became connected and said, I'll be happy to meet with you and just to help you. And that's been going on for about 2.5 years. I meet with him about every other Monday morning, or early in the morning before he goes off to work, and to just to help him see the work that he is overseeing get revitalized. And God's bringing some fruit in his life as a result of that.
Praise God for that. That's great. Talk to us about what level you participate. You talked a little bit about the local level. Are there meetings you attend as far as the Michigan Association of SBC Churches? And do you have any participation at the national level? I know that there's a convention in that.
I should go to the national convention. I never have. I may end up going this year. We'll see, because if our son and his wife are presented before the national convention as, you know, the new crop of missionaries that are going to be sent, I would want to be there. I've never gone. We have sent some delegates to go to the national meeting and to vote there on the motions as they come up. We've only done that one time. It's something that we ought to do a little bit more, but we just never have. On the state level, that's a little bit easier for me. And so I've had more involvement. I've not obligated people from the congregation to go to that, though we could send representatives. That's just been something that I have done. The biggest level of involvement, though, has been church planting. That has been something that's made the most sense for us as a congregation. And I guess that speaks to what involvement with the SBC. You look at what is there, and you're able to say, hey, you know what? This makes sense for us. Let's do this. Whereas something over here, I mean, you might look at the women's retreat that's going on and you go, oh, that would be great. You know, that makes sense for us. Or you may say, no, what we're already doing really works well for us. Fine. It's you have that total freedom to be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me again when you joined the SBC.
I think it was probably like 13 years ago. Maybe okay. Not 15. Okay. Probably 13 years ago, we connected with the state association and said we would like to formally partner with you. At that point, then, they had to look at our doctrinal statement to make sure we weren't heretics. And you know, get a sense even on our polity as a congregation. One thing I really appreciate about Southern Baptist life is that they so trust the local congregation, even to the point where if you have a student who wants to go to a Southern Baptist school like Boyce College or Southern Seminary, part of the application process is a vote of the leaders or the congregation saying, we're behind that student. I think that is wonderful. It's not going forward unless the congregation is involved. So, but that means your polity has to line up. So they're looking at that to say, are we even on the same page? Well, we were on the same page. And so for them it was, all right, we're good to go with it. It's up to us then to determine what our level of involvement is, how much we want to support, where we want that monies to go. That is our call to make. Now, what we did is we sat down with them and said, what would you suggest? What would be helpful for you guys? That's because that's what we want to do. We want to think bigger than ourselves. We want to think about others. So what would be helpful? And so they gave us what, from their perspective, the leaders, what would be helpful for them. And so we took it from there and we earmarked the funds that we voted as a congregation to give. We earmarked it based upon, all right, what made sense to us, what we thought would be helpful.
Good. So did you or others in the church have any reservations or concerns about partnering with the SBC? Were there any issues that came up that you guys had to think through?
Not really, because we, for years, had supported Southern Seminary. Mm-hmm. And by this time, we had Al Mohler come back to preach a second time. A lot of our students started to go to Boyce College and to Southern Seminary. We had then Don Whitney, who's a prof there. Don has been at our church. Steve Wellum, who's a prof there. He's been at Cornerstone. Mark Dever, who's a trustee. He's been at Cornerstone. And so there was the congregation was so well fed by these brothers, and they saw the fruit of some of the interns that we had coming out of there, that they were just, yeah, this is fine. This makes sense. Let's do this. So there really wasn't it wasn't even a ripple. It was just, yeah, let's do this.
How could you see, so I'm going to give it to you both ways. How could you see the SBC benefiting Union Lake? And how could you see Union Lake benefiting the SBC?
The SBC would provide for your congregation more options than you currently have, both in terms of missions. The International Mission Board is the largest mission agency in the world. We support missionaries with SEND, with Greater European Mission, they used to call it the African Inland Mission. We support a number of mission agencies, but the IMB is the largest one. And so by partnering with them, you're partnering with an agency that's got a footprint all over the world. So boy, automatically there are just doors that open up to you, that whether it be short-term mission trip kind of things, it's just so many more resources become available for you from that standpoint. And that is true not only in international missions, that is true even here in the States with a lot of the ministries that are taking place. There's a lot of training that goes on that's already available for those who partner with the SBC. Obviously, educational. That's a huge, huge thing, to be able to go to a credible institution and have that kind of tuition break. That's a wonderful, wonderful benefit. Just as Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, for just as the body is one and has many parts, and all the parts of that body, though many, are one body, so also is Christ. Partnering, having this, being in friendly cooperation with other churches allows you to experience the fact that together we are able to accomplish more than what we can just by ourselves. And we can do this without giving up what really is the autonomy of the local congregation. So that's how I see not just specific ministries that you're able to take advantage of, but as a congregation, it helps you think in terms of we are part of something bigger than us. When we gather together as a local congregation on Sunday morning, it's not just us. We are part of something that's all over this globe. And we really are as followers of Christ. How would Union Lakes be an encouragement to the SBC? Well, for one, is particularly in the state level, I know that we need healthy congregations. We need more churches that can provide to some of these church planting guys encouragement and prayer and mentoring. And that would probably just be one of the most immediate things that I can think of, as well as just having a voice that helps protect the integrity of Southern Baptist life. Because just as the SBC went sideways, you know, a few decades ago, you know, starting in the 40s and the 50s, they could go sideways again, like anybody can. And so what's going to help protect that? Well, it's people who recognize that there's a trust that we have been given. Let's help guard that trust.
That's great. That's all my list of questions. What questions do you all have for Bob? Josiah, you want to give Mr. Messino a microphone there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep. Okay. We can hear you. Right.
So my question is, besides the Southern Baptist Seminary, are there other learning venues that the SBC offers for people who will not go to like a full-time seminary training?
Do you mean, are there undergraduate colleges? Is that what you mean?
No, I'm asking about ongoing or regular either workshops, seminars or conference learning venues for people who just want to, like Simeon Trust, for instance, has a regular workshop on different expositional preaching subjects. So are there any such venues at SBC?
Yes. For example, for the last several years, we have provided the facility for the entire state association to come in and do about 80 workshops for all of the churches in the Southern Baptist Convention in the state of Michigan. Everything from child evangelism to Sunday school teaching to youth ministry to small group training. So that is a heartbeat of the Southern Baptist Convention, wanting to continue to equip not just the pastors, but to the members of the congregation. So that takes place. Then there's also a number of training workshops that are done in the state at various locations in the state on evangelism or on missions. expositional preaching also. So those kinds of things are going on. I regularly, probably every other week, receive an email that is notifying me of this kind of training that's going on. And it's available to the members of the congregation to be able to take part in that. And because it's supported by the state association, if there's a cost, it's a minimal cost. It's just very reasonable to be able to partner in. And for us as a church, we'll look at those things and go, in some cases, yeah, that would be a good thing to go to. Or that's something that we're already doing, so it wouldn't make sense for us to do that. So again, it's up to us to be able to do it. They're not viewed as being a bad church because we don't participate in everything. Everybody understands it's available if it helps.
Others? Other questions? Ruth?
I'm just thinking of the missionaries that we now support. How will they fit into this if we're going with the SBC and supporting the missionaries there? I mean, are we going to be able to do both? Or will our missionaries have to join? I'm confused about
that. No, that's a great question. No, I think I answered this one. So current missionaries, in other words, SBC churches don't have to only support missionaries through the North American Missions Board and the International Missions Board. They're free to support missionaries from any missions agency, just as Bob mentioned a number of different missions agencies that they support missionaries through. So there's no requirement to have everybody shift over to Southern Baptist or something like that. No, we would continue to, as a church family, to make those decisions. You want to add anything to that?
We support a lot of missionaries, the all of them up to this point. There's not, none of them are Southern Baptist missionaries. The first couple from our church that's going to go with the International Mission Board, which is the mission board of the Southern Baptist Convention, is our current pastoral intern. Because we partner with the Southern Baptist Convention, and because he and his wife have been approved, they're right at the final steps of being approved by the International Mission Board, they will have all of their support provided through the International Mission Board. They don't have to go spend 3, 4, 5 years raising support. It's all done. They will go, it's a hard process that they've gone through in order to get to this point, but it makes so much sense that instead of running all over the country trying to raise support, churches have already been supporting the International Mission Board. They're able to go. Now, as a church, instead of saying, "Hey, that's great, IMB's footing the bill." Well, for us, it's like we're thrilled that they have full support, but we're going to increase our support and for them so that the cost of getting them on the field is we're helping the IMB shoulder some of that. Does that make sense? So we're giving what we would normally give so that some of those resources that would be going for Bobby and Taylor are able to go to somebody else. So for us, it's we don't want to hitchhike. We want to help with gas in the tank. Okay.
That help? Other questions? Wait till you get a mic. They're recording it, that's why.
Just to follow up with these two comments, how would the congregation be aware of the different needs, or even a map of all the missionaries and the mission, short mission trip, that trips that are going on at SBC? Let's say a member would like to go to Puerto Rico, for instance, Guam or something like that. How would they be made aware of these activities?
I don't know. Do you know?
Well, that would, you know, just up to really the leadership of the church, who would say, hey, I think this would benefit so-and-so, and just, you know, making you aware of it, or providing a link to perhaps the state website that is updating this kind of information. So it's really on the plate of the leadership to say, I think this would be beneficial to either a group within the church or the congregation as a whole, just like you would make people aware of Together for the Gospel, or as we would make our guys aware of Fellowship in the Gospel, or if we're having, I think you guys have sent some people over when we've had some counseling seminars, or when we've had Kay Arthur come in for the ladies or something like that. It's just, Jeff gets a lot of things. He doesn't share it all with you because it's going to be on a date where you already have something going on. But he would also look at something else and go, oh, this makes sense, and would inform you of that. And that would be the same.
That's a good question. Others? Yeah. Up here? Si? Mrs. Ramey, right up here in the front.
So how does that affect, like, the local church if there's a change in the leadership, if the pastor moves on someplace else? How does that work?
Are you looking to get a change in leadership here?
No. I've always been with Independent Fundamental Baptist, and I've got to the point where it's like, you know what, we really need to be under some kind of a authority or group or organization or something. So the more I hear about the SBC, the more I'm interested in it. But my question was, if the Lord moves you on someplace else, as a rule, does a church probably look for someone else that would agree to go with the SBC? I mean, I don't know how that works. This is all new to me.
So the SBC, again, is a it's not an organization that has any government authority over our church. Okay. So we plug into the SBC to cooperate with other churches for various ministry purposes. And as Bob's explained in a number of different ways, we, you know, things that make sense for our church, we would participate in. Things that wouldn't be helpful or conflict with other things that we're doing, we wouldn't participate with. But as far as the church family itself here at Union Lake, we remain independent in that way, right? Nobody tells us how to run our church or who would be an elder at this church or a senior pastor or something like that. But just as a church, we might decide at a later date, hey, SBC doesn't make any sense for us anymore, maybe because it's gone off the rails theologically or something like that, heaven forbid. But the church family here might make a decision later on because of a change in the eldership to also make a change. But the church family would be voting on that. We remain an independent church that has autonomy. That is, we maintain our own authority, and no one else tells us how to, you know, behave or set the direction for our church. Does that make sense? Now, that said, we hope to make some connections, right, with other sister churches within the SBC that might come and come alongside us and help us if we had a time of need where we needed maybe help filling the pulpit or, you know, something like that. In the same way that Berean and Lakes, sent me and Tom here to do that when Union Lake was in need. You want to add something there?
Yeah, instead of seeing as the SBC as providing any kind of oversight, see it as providing support. That's really you know, trying to help raise churches up and encourage them. It's intentionally not this at all. But your question is so good, because historically, I think it's just human nature anyway to say, hey, you know, Frank Sinatra saying, you know, I did it my way, and my generation was Bon Jovi, you know, it's my life. And, churches can be that way, you know? And even though we can see in Scripture there's no place for a hierarchy that goes over the local congregation, what we also see, though, in Scripture is an intentional partnership. When Paul would write to the church at Corinth, or when he would write to the church of Rome, he would say, I'm sending you greetings from these brothers and sisters. They care about you. They long for you. They pray for you. We don't get that like we could. So the more we as local independent congregations look at one another as sister congregations, that's healthy. And so that when there is a sister congregation that is looking for a senior pastor, it is wonderful to be able to appeal to some local congregations and to the pastors and saying, you know somebody, you know somebody, you know somebody that you could recommend to the pulpit committee or to the elders of that church if they were looking for that, because we know each other. We know the personalities of this area. We know who would kind of fit. So we're able to, I think, help one another with that kind of thing. So I think the answer to your observation of some of the weakness of the independent church, the answer is not hierarchy. It's just humility and understanding and intentional partnering with one another.
That's great.
Other questions? Yeah, Vaughn up front here.
Thanks. You indicated that before you became sort of affiliated or one of the Southern Baptist churches, you chose to support the Boys College or the seminary for some reason. And obviously, I'm assuming then, as being part of that, there's additional support, you know, for the convention or for missions or whatever. How do you guys determine how much, you know, term financially that you want to send, you know, each week, each month, each year, whatever, to the Southern Baptist Convention?
That is just part of our budget, that whenever we set up the budget, that we say, okay, here's how much we want to earmark to Southern Seminary or to Southeastern Seminary, and then here's how much we want to earmark for the state association. So it may vary from year to year, just, you know, based upon how you go through your normal budget process and what other needs there are for other ministries or what resources are coming in. So honestly, it's just, that's exactly how we do it.
So there aren't, you know, financial minimums that the SBC sets.
No.
It's completely different from congregation to congregation.
Yes.
So my guess is that your determination as a church at Cornerstone on how much to support probably largely is connected with how much you're participating or desire to come alongside and aid.
Right. I think that's probably true. You know, the more of a relationship you have with something, the more of a vision you have for that particular ministry and the more you're going to support it. So, yeah.
Good. That answered. Other questions? Got him on the hot seat. Anything else? Okay.
So what did he preach on this morning? Hey, if my people can remember 7 hours later what I preached on, I'm a happy guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It was a part one. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Yay.
Good. Good. Yeah. So Larry, then Misty.
I have several people in our family that have been missionaries. My sister and her husband were missionaries for 3 terms, I believe it was, in Africa. And during that time, they were all under SEN missions. Now, you mentioned that they would be able to get full support through this Southern Convention. Now, when they went out, they not only had church support, they also had individual support. And something happened, probably doesn't happen too often, but they were over-supported. They had over 700 people supporting them. And he was a mission doctor in Gami. And also, it seemed whenever he would mention a need on his prayer list, that need would be met so suddenly. For instance, he needed a Land Rover, and he just mentioned it once, and a dealer in Grand Rapids said, "I'll donate the Land Rover to you." And this went on and on. And people who have missions that have their individual support already, how does that work into this support that you're talking about?
It wouldn't change anything. We have missionaries with SEND, and they are supported by our congregation. And I also know individual members of our congregation continue to support them. And Jerry Benj. All right. So
Jerry Benj preached here at a missions conference a few years ago.
So Jerry was an associate pastor at Cornerstone for 14 years before he went out. We support Jerry and Kelly as they're sending church a significant amount of money through SEND. And we continue to do that. And Jerry and Kelly went out with SEND while we were part of the SBC. So it made sense for them to go with SEND. And so we were fully supporting of it. So the situation you're referring to is a wonderful situation. And the benefit of churches supporting missionaries like that is there can be a good, close relationship that is built over time. That is great. So supporting the IMB allows the mission. A lot of missionaries don't have that story,
yeah, right,
and so it's
right.
Not a. It's not. This is the right way to do it, and this is the wrong way to do it. No, they're two different ways of getting missionaries onto the field, and of course, that's what we're after.
Good, Misty, you had a question.
So this is less of a question and more of a comment about missions and about IMB. So everybody here knows, but Joel and I want to be missionaries in Japan. And we've been looking into different agencies, and we had very, very early on looked into IMB, but we're not SBC, so that automatically ruled that one out, right? And at first, there was a lot of confusion on our part about how that worked. How does this convention send out missionaries, and then, but that isn't putting missionaries in churches, and how do those relationships work? But as God has convinced us over the last 2 years of the role of the local church and the importance of the local church in missions, the more that model has intrigued us. And since we are considering becoming SBC, we're personally, like, we are becoming more interested in IMB because that makes it easier for us to maintain these relationships here and to strengthen these relationships here with our body. You guys know us so well, and that will strengthen the work that we do. So we keep the missionaries that we're supporting, and Joel and I aren't going to 18 bajillion churches where people don't know us as well as you guys do. You can hold us accountable better than churches that we meet once every 5 years. So for us, it's we see the value in it. So thank you.
You have anything you want to comment on that or add to that? Or because one potential, like I've heard as an objection as well, if the IMB is supporting, you know, missionaries at full, you know, at full level, then what's their connection to actual local churches?
Well, they work at helping those making sure those relationships are there, but particularly a sending church.
Sure. Yeah.
That's where the relationship is the stickiest, and it ought to be the stickiest. And so when people come back for their time of home service, then there can be a real intentional time of pouring into them and a rest, and they're not having to travel all over the country to do all their reporting.
That's great. Any other questions? Okay. Bob, thanks for coming and helping us get some answers and hear, so, you know, your experience and your stories and connections with it. I think you've helped us to see some things more clearly, and that helps us a lot. Cornerstone Baptist Church and you are prayed for regularly at our pulpit as one of the churches that we pray for, and so we love you guys, and so do send our greetings back to the brothers and sisters there. And let me close this in a word of prayer, okay?